Standing up for Milwaukee, this is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show on News Talk 1130 WISN. As you know, I've been ragging for a few weeks that we haven't gotten a response from the Milwaukee Police Department to specific complaints I've aired from residents of the city about slow police response time to what they felt were dangerous incidents in which the police department simply didn't respond quickly enough for their taste, and I thought that their complaints were legitimate. We also heard from a couple of other Milwaukee officials who shared this concern. I've been trying to get the police chief to come on the program to share his philosophy in this area and respond to this. In the interim, as you may know, there's been a major series in the newspaper this week detailing the cases of Milwaukee police officers who have, in one form or another, violated the law but remain on the police force. And obviously, I want to talk to the police chief about that topic as well. So we're joined right now by the police chief of the city of Milwaukee, Edward Flynn. Chief, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What I'd like to do here is break this up into a couple of parts. And I want to, and I'm sure you want to talk about the series that's appeared in the newspaper this week about the police officers. And I want to deal with that second and deal with the issue that I've been raising on my own program for some time here about police response time first. So let's have it. What is your philosophy toward response time as part of the overall philosophy of running a police department and prioritizing the things that you think are important? Where does it fit in? And why don't you give me your general thought on response time in whatever way you'd like to phrase it?
Sure. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity. It's extraordinarily difficult to communicate with the community through sound bites and through newspaper articles where they get to cherry pick what you're saying.
That's why we wanted to do it exactly in this form.
So I appreciate that. Okay, let me take a step back. You know, response time is not a single phenomenon. All right, police are called for an extraordinary array of circumstances. Some are critical emergencies. Some are things that, you know, are basically about bad things happening that need to be explored. Some are to take past reports. Some are to take, you know, to give advice to people. There's just an extraordinary array of activities. Everybody from somebody asleep on the sidewalk to a car crash to a crime in progress to my kid won't go to school, send a policeman to make him go to school. What we work to do in the police department is develop priorities. And since I got here and, you know, and I examined the phenomenon, what I found is the police department was devoting an extraordinary array of resources just to respond to all calls faster. And what had happened fundamentally is we'd abandoned the public spaces of Milwaukee. Now, I didn't go into this issue half-cocked. I'm a student of my profession as well as a practitioner of many years' service, and all of the research in criminal justice about police response times has proven the following. It has no effect on crime. This is not to say that there aren't things we should go to faster, and when we don't get to those things faster, we didn't do it right. But the vast array of citizen requests for police service can appropriately be delayed somewhat in order to create time for the police to engage in proactive anti-crime activities. Our problem was that we in the Milwaukee Police Department had become so obsessed with response times that we weren't engaged in proactive policing. We were not tactically taking on gangs in their environments with any coherent strategy.
And so what
we needed to do,
was
to examine our call response situation, develop alternatives for some of them. You know, we've developed a very innovative program called Differential Police Response, where I take injured officers who are otherwise fully qualified, and I give them computers and telephones, and I ask them, whenever we can possibly do it, to handle priority 4, priority 3 calls over the phone, since so many of them are advice calls. And we're up to handling about 20% of our calls that way right now. It's a police intervention. This isn't just taking a report. It's giving somebody advice about a problem they're having without dispatching a car across town.
I think what you're describing makes sense. And I as I've said on the show in all of these cases, the police department is overwhelmed with stupid calls that shouldn't go to 911. I talked to a police officer recently who told me that someone called 911 because her cable was out. I understand that some calls have to be put at a very, very low priority. And if indeed the police department in the past is making response time the be-all and end-all, that would be a misprioritization. On the other hand, you would certainly agree that that can be taken too far. are, and that when people feel as though if they call the police aren't going to come, when they feel unsafe, when they feel a threat, isn't that a mistake? And do you feel that perhaps you've gone too far in the opposite direction?
Well, I, again, thank you for the question, because what infuriated me about the newspaper article in which they spent, again, thousands of pages trying to discredit a respected police strategy is the following. They cited examples in which we didn't meet our own standards. All right? When we handle over 400,000 calls for service, those are dispatch calls, 400,000 calls a year. We get 600 and some thousand calls for police assistance. On some nights, the phones are lit up with requests for police assistance. In that backdrop, there are going to be times when we don't meet our own standards for response to calls. Nobody who thinks a burglar is in their house should wait hours for the police to come. That's not doing well by our own standards. I don't want people to conflate us falling short of responding appropriately to urgent or emergency calls with our strategy of de-emphasizing response times to minor calls so that we can create proactive anti-crime policing.
We had
two different things.
We had back-to-back on my program on consecutive days two very, very similar situations. One, and obviously you're aware of this because I've communicated to the staff about it. One, a family on the northwest side, woman came home around 10 to 12 on a Saturday night, admittedly probably the worst time of the week to have to call the police department right before midnight on a Saturday. She found her house had been broken into. She saw her husband's glasses sitting on the bureau, which alarmed her. And her husband was supposed to have been home by the time. She called the police department and had to wait 4 hours before anyone came, even though she communicated again and again. She felt somebody might still be in the house. She didn't know. The second instance occurred a day later in the neighborhood that Mayor Barrett lives in, where a homeowner was contacted. She was at her boyfriend's house out in the suburbs. She owns a duplex. Her renter called her and said, somebody has broken into the house. And it took 4 hours for a police response. Then when the police finally arrived 4 hours later, they began a canvas of the neighborhood, obviously useless, 4 hours after the break-in occurred. Now, those incidents occurred back-to-back. Were those foul-ups, or were they a result of a de-emphasizing of the response time because you feel that because your people felt that these were not things that required an immediate response?
They were foul-ups. As a result, we changed our policy precisely because of those two anecdotes. My feeling is that when it comes to a burglary, particularly one in which people feel there may be someone still on the premise, it should be treated like a violent crime, and we've told our people that. I think burglaries do more violence to neighborhoods than the average, you know, drug dealer shooting the other drug dealer in the butt does, okay? People know where most of the violent crime is concentrated. It's concentrated among offenders. Property crime, that really hurts people who are innocent victims. So, you know, what we did, we were dissatisfied. I mean, I'm sitting around the conference table being told these horror stories, and what hair I had in my head, I was tugging on and pulling out in small clumps. We should have done better. Our previous methodology was to call back, you know, sometime an hour after the initial call and see if they still felt that there was a problem. That's insufficient. So what we're going to do from now on, and what we've announced to our command staff and to our people in the communications division, that if we get a call about someone who thinks they've got someone still in their house after a pass break, we're to find a car and dispatch it. The car won't be able to stay long enough to take the report if it's a report call. Okay, it'll get bumped lower on the queue because reports are lower on the queue than emergencies. But if somebody thinks they have a prowler in their house, that's an urgent call. We should get there and clear the house. If there's no prowler, we'll give the people the case number and we'll put them back in the queue so when a car is available to take a report, it will. But I certainly believe that those are two situations that should have been brought to our attention, and we're going to do our best to make sure that they don't reoccur.
Well, I'm glad to hear your response. The point that I have raised is there is nothing that turns, you know, and I speak as a resident of the city, there's nothing that turns a city resident into a suburbanite faster than the fear that the feeling that if they think that they are not safe, the police won't come. We all accept and understand that if you live in Milwaukee, it's not the same as living out in the boondocks or living in a community where people don't lock their doors. There are trade-offs that you have to make, but there is a presumption, especially if you don't live in a high crime neighborhood, that if you feel afraid, that you feel something is wrong, and not some made up hypochondria, but a real fear that the police won't come, that the police will come. And your statement is that you don't believe your philosophy on response time is in conflict with what I just described.
No, absolutely not. And first of all, I'd like to thank you. I've actually found a member of the news media that lives in the city That's nice. The other part of it is, no, I mean, we get it, all right? As long as there have been policing and 911 calls, there have been complaints about response times. I mean, this police department was no stranger to complaints about response times, even when it made response times its most important priority. But what I need to get the community to understand that the three-minute delay in response times to priority three and priority four calls.
And when you say three and four, those are lower on the list.
Lower on the list. Right. Those are past incidents or advice incidents, but nobody's at risk here. You know, I've traded 3 minutes for those kinds of calls for 112 fewer homicides and 1,900 fewer robberies. All right? That's our goal, is to make people safer. Our goal is not to treat concerned citizens with any form of contempt. And I know there are times people get extremely frustrated with the questions the dispatchers ask as they try to get more information. And sometimes our dispatchers, you know, they act less than professionally because they too are under a lot of stress. But I do want people to understand we are not de-emphasizing our response to urgent and emergency calls at all. And if those get mishandled, they got mishandled. They were not the casualty of our policing strategy.
You have 200 unfilled slots in the police department right now. Do you believe you have sufficient personnel to do the job the way you want to do it in Milwaukee, or do you believe that those slots should be filled?
I'm not the kind of person who's going to run around making excuses for why we don't meet our own goals and objectives. You know, it would be nice to have those 200 spots filled. Sure it would be. But let me tell you, I'm an active member of the Major City Chiefs Association. I'm the only police department I know of right now in Major City Chiefs that's hiring. We've got 35 people in an academy class now. We're going to put on 65 next year. Would I like to have more? Sure. But I'm not going to ask for those more officers at the expense of all those other city departments that are already taking cuts so the city can afford the higher police.
Well, that's where you and I disagree. I believe you could find the money in the city budget on the many things that are wasted by the mayor, which is why I asked the question. Do you believe that you can fulfill the mandate that you have in the way you want to do it with the personnel staffing you have now, or do you believe that there will have to be sacrifices by being 200 short?
I believe we can fulfill our responsibilities to the public with the resources at our disposal, and I'm grateful for the fact that additional resources are coming our way.
When we come back after the break, Chief, I want to talk to you about the series that's appeared in the newspaper this week and get your response to it. We're talking to Milwaukee Police Chief Ed Flynn. It's 4:20 at News Talk 1130 WISN. We're joined right now by Milwaukee Police Chief Ed Flynn. The newspaper has been running a massive series of reports, taking up a remarkable amount of space, on current Milwaukee police officers who were not fired despite various violations of the law, in some cases ordinance violations, and in some cases incidents that were more severe, a focus in particular on drunk driving. The newspaper says it's been working on this for a year. I want to get the Chief, first of all, just a general question. Do you believe that the series has been fair? And if not, why not?
Okay. Again, thanks for the question. I'm going to take a deep breath, and I'm going to answer very calmly. The short answer is no. It's a hatchet job. They developed their premise, devoted extraordinary resources to proving that premise, and then used a mallet to kill a flea. Now, they had to go back 30 years to come back with their misconduct. They had to cover events that were committed by 19-year-olds. We have guys who got city citations for jumping snow fences to pee in the wrong place when they were 21 years old, and now they've got a mugshot in the newspaper. You know, we've got families who had trouble once, might have been an act of domestic violence. They've reconciled. They've been living together peacefully for years. And now any Tom, Dick, or Harry can go on this wonderful website and figure out who the victim of a domestic violence assault was 10 years ago and humiliate that family when nobody else knew. I think it is despicable. We ran the numbers ourselves, and once you clear out all the city ordinance violations and the one-time drunk driving violations and the guys that got jammed up on a traffic violation, you are dealing with 31 officers out of 4,989 who worked during those 30 years. That's 0.6% of the force. I'd be happy if that newspaper spent one-tenth of the words of that article on the positive work of this police department rather than an all-out assault on an important civic institution, which they seem committed to discrediting.
The newspaper series seemed to imply, or at least they found specific examples where they felt that some officers might have been undercharged by the district attorney's office, and that lowered them into this small ordinance violation that you mentioned, whereas the people perhaps should have been charged with crimes, and that might make the numbers more inflated than what you just described. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure. See, what exists in the criminal justice system is something called due process. And in a due process situation with standards of proof that require proof beyond a reasonable doubt, people have to make intelligent charging decisions to see if the facts can support the initial charges. It's an open secret that this police department routinely overcharges its officers and asks for DA review because we recognize that we're under constant scrutiny. We understand that there's forces in the community that will do anything they can to question, discredit, any decision we make about an internal discipline. So all of these things go to district attorney's review. And the district attorney review basically consists of their applying the standards of proof required to secure a conviction to the facts before them and determining a charge that will support the facts in front of them. Believe me, it happens with every other citizen. And if you look at the numbers of conducts you're talking about in the police department, you look at this report, it's thousands of words of stories. There's no data analysis in it. I'd never accept a report from that from my command staff. I want data. I want data to help us make timely and accurate decisions. There's no data in it.
Let's talk about your philosophy. Obviously, since they went back decades and reported on incidents involving police officers, who may now be 49 years old and they're 20 and so on, most of these things dealt with situations that occurred and discipline that occurred or didn't occur prior to your becoming the police chief. Would you say that your philosophy is different than what the philosophy in the past has been in terms of dealing with officers who may have committed some sort of violations or not?
It's hard to say. I think my predecessors have all tried to do the best they could in the environment in which they were functioning. I think I have been very fortunate. It's going to sound like shameless sucking up, but, so be it. My fire and police commission has been extraordinarily supportive of my disciplines. That was not always true. Now, I don't know why it wasn't always true, but it wasn't always true, and I think some chiefs have had a tougher time with the personalities on their various commissions, not to mention arbitrations, not to mention court interventions. I mean, no act is more scrutinized by external parties than police discipline, all right? I mean, we got people out there that say, well, you need more civilian review. We've got more civilian review than any employee on the planet. Between the fire and police commission, arbitrators, appeals to the civil courts, criminal courts, DA's reviews, the United States Attorney's reviews, we've got more oversight than any government institution in the country. And the point here is that oversight sometimes has second-guessed chiefs more than others. We've been very fortunate these last few years. I have ramped up discipline for some offenses. I mean, the discipline for a first-time drunk driving offense now is 30 days. It used to be 2 or 3 days. So, that has happened. But we've also engaged in a very positive conversation with the members of this department about the stresses of the job, about the temptations to use alcohol to relieve stress and anxiety, and about our need to look out for each other and make sure that we don't step over the line because of the overuse of alcohol.
Every case, obviously, is different. So this question's hard to ask, but I'm going to ask it this way. Where in your mind is the line for which of the type of offense an officer would commit that you believe the officer should be fired? Obviously, each case is different, but there must be some way that you could verbalize when you believe the offense is serious enough that it would call for termination. How would you answer that?
Well, I've terminated, I think, 16 people since I've been here, 16 sworn officers. And what I look at when I'm reviewing conduct, what was the motivation of the employee? Were they trying to do the right thing and it went wrong, or were they trying to do a wrong thing? What was the degree of harm they caused? Did some innocent party suffer a harm because of their misconduct? How experienced are they? Are they a rookie, a baby right out of the academy, or should they have known better? Did they unintentionally make a mistake, or did they intentionally do wrong? And finally, how many times have they been in the jackpot before they appeared before me on this case? So I factor all of those things. In a simple word, I certainly am more oriented towards firing somebody for an act of misconduct that victimizes an innocent party and is a misuse of their authority. Certainly, that's the top of the list for getting fired.
But what about off-duty kinds of things? I think you would probably say a felony off-duty would almost always be grounds for termination. What about a misdemeanor crime? Off-duty, not involving the performance of your job function. Is that an automatic firing or not?
It very much depends on the circumstances. What are the facts of the case? I mean, I have a duty to the public. I've said often, and I've said in many different venues, I've got a responsibility to stand up for the cops. And there's times I got to stand up to them, and I'm not afraid to do either. And the point is, when I'm going to sit in judgment of them, I'm going to take into consideration all of the facts. And those facts, you know, are, as I just said, they have to do with the conduct before me, their experience, their motivation, their past record, the degree of harm, and whether or not they injured somebody.
First offense, drunk driving. Should it be grounds for termination or a lesser discipline?
Well, in the state of Wisconsin, until very recently, it was a traffic citation five times before it was a criminal offense.
That's correct.
Currently, it's a traffic violation now. I'm not going to remake the culture of Wisconsin. I mean, everybody knows police professionals have had a trouble with alcohol over the years for a variety of reasons. You put those coppers in Wisconsin, you've doubled the problem of the local culture as it affects personal conduct. Whether or not somebody gets terminated for drunk driving very much, again, depends on degree of harm. What happened? Vast majority of my coppers, they get bagged for drunk driving, get bagged because they were asleep behind the wheel of the car off the road or driving 2 miles an hour. That's how most of them get nabbed. They don't get nabbed driving crazy. They get nabbed, trying to get home at 1 mile an hour.
What about second offense?
Well, second offense, again, depends on circumstances, but they got 30 days the first time. Depending on the circumstances, they might get 60 or they might get terminated. It very much, again, depends on the circumstances I've enumerated before.
Do you think that the series implied that you are soft on rogue cops? Did it imply that, do you believe?
You know, I had a hard time figuring out what their point was, trying to wade through it. Okay? I mean, there was just tons of verbiage that wandered all over the map. I can't help but feel that, bringing up all of this stuff now in the last quarter of my current appointment is motivated by something other than coincidence. I think they took their swing and they missed. But in so doing, I think they unfairly maligned a lot of good police officers who've done good things and made a mistake when they were baby cops, and now they're being humiliated in public. I think it's just a dreadful assault on good people who made mistakes.
Do you believe that the reporter who covers the police department, Gina Barton, has an axe to grind against police officers?
You know, I think that's a reasonable question. I'm hard pressed to think of a single story she's done that wasn't about, bad boys, so to speak. But listen, Mark, here's the weird thing about being in this town. They've got three reporters full time assigned to one department of city government. They got one guy covers the rest of city government. They got one guy covers all the county government. For some reason, it's a full court press on this police department. We are up to our ears in freedom of information requests from those people. They can't get enough of trying to undermine us and undermine our credibility. I do not know what their motivation is, but I can tell you they have become a secondary job for me here. I spend nearly as much time trying to deal with just them as I do with crime, fear, and disorder.
I want to shift gears to one other area, and this is something that I've talked about on my program with regard to crime stats. You've had a reputation as a guy who is, in a good and a bad way, stats obsessed, that you've used the stats to try to be more proactive with your policing. If the stats show that there's been a flurry of certain types of incidents in one area, let's go into that area and let's look into this. Let's be on top of the stats because they're the best indicator of what's happening in the community. On the other hand, there's been a suggestion that there's been an underreporting of some of the stats and that crime in Milwaukee isn't going down as much as the stats say. Do you believe that you are using stats to fairly tell the people of the community what's going on?
Once again, Mark, thank you for actually asking that question out loud and try it instead of sneaking around trying to discredit me like some people are. I'm happy to take it head on. Listen, we're not hiding any dead bodies. I haven't figured out a way to induce people not to report their stolen cars to their insurance agency so that they can get their insurance. If anything, I think we are taking more crime reports than any other time because we have so many more checks and balances and because we provide so many more venues to get those crimes. We work very hard to make sure that our numbers are accurate and timely. I will share with you the following. Every reform chief I know, whether it's Bill Bratton or Chuck Ramsey or John Timoney, every single one of them, when they've come into town and implemented a set of reforms that have changed the culture of the department and reduced crime, they have been assailed by some members of their unions trying to say, oh, well, the numbers aren't real. Well, guess what? I think when you take 2,000 coppers and you give them accurate and timely intelligence and you have meetings every single day about crime and focus their attention relentlessly on crime and organize the entire police department around crime control, I think cops make a difference. And when members of their collective bargaining unit want to sneak around and imply that their members don't make a difference on the levels of safety in this community, I think that's cynical, and people that listen to them are just as cynical.
Well, there's an area, though, where I feel that you did do something that resulted in a lowering of the stats, and that's when you dismantled the voter fraud unit in 2008. Now, you and I may have a disagreement about this, but I think Milwaukee is an American center for vote fraud. You've had Acorn and other organizations simply breaking the law in our community. We just had a report, not in the city but in the suburbs, of people coming into Milwaukee and registering to vote while they were staying at a hotel in the city. By dismantling that unit, the number of instances you're going to find of voter fraud is going to be reduced. Couldn't that be perceived as manipulating the stats?
Okay, two things, Mark. First, voter fraud is not a reportable offense under the Uniform Crime Report, so that would have no impact on my crime numbers. The FBI doesn't collect that.
It would have an impact, though, on the number of cases of voter fraud that we could talk about, because
that might be. But I'm just answering the first question, okay? Which is, it would not have an impact on my data. Second thing is, I don't blame you for being misinformed about this issue because you probably read a Wall Street Journal article about it, and I don't blame anybody for believing the Wall Street Journal. I used to until I read that article, which was written without interviewing a single member of the chain of command, but simply repeated the accusations of a disgruntled detective. Guess what? We didn't dismantle any unit. And on election day, we had more officers assigned to polls and on patrol with assistant district's attorney than in any other election. None of that got into the article, but it got into the internet, and I'll never get it back. I'll always be the guy that somehow is condoning voter fraud, and I'm just a prisoner of a bad newspaper article.
Do you have anybody on the department that right now is charged with the duty of investigating illegal election activities? I think the answer is you don't.
We don't have anybody assigned to it full time because that would be a ridiculous use
Why?
Of these resources.
Why? You don't think the crime is going on in this area full time right now? We've got people swarming into the area to collect signatures on recall petitions. You know, there are some of us who believe, you know, people who come from organizations that have a history of criminal activity like Acorn in this area. I happen to think it is something for which there should be full time detective staff, because it's an endemic problem in this community, unfortunately, because the community power structure is democratic and most of the people engaging in this crooked behavior is democratic. It's not treated seriously, but I happen to think it is a serious problem.
Well, on election day and right before the election or right after the election, we have people assigned to the issue and we deal with it appropriately. But during the rest of the year, I want my boys and girls out there fighting criminals.
I want to leave you with this question, and I don't want you to think that it's a cheap shot, but it's going to be a direct question, and it was put to me by someone who is a prosecutor who has asked not to be named. And he's obviously a critic of yours, but it goes to, I think, the heart of what some of the people have criticized you have been saying. He indicated to me that he feels that there is a systemic dismantling of the department that leads to fewer investigations and therefore fewer arrests, and that this has lowered crime stats. I'm sure you disagree with that, but I want you to be able to respond to this notion that's been put out there by some that by having fewer officers on the street and fewer detectives in certain areas, that you end up with fewer arrests and that that's what drives the stats down. Your response?
My response is that I answer men directly who ask me questions. If that little sneak wants to run around and whisper in your ear, he's a little sneak, and I'm not going to answer his question.
Well, I'll ask the question then. Has the manpower situation and reassignments in the Detective Bureau been one of the things that's contributed to fewer arrests, and do we have an artificial lowering of the stats?
Well, as I indicated to you before, we've got more ways to take police reports than ever before. There's nothing wrong with the Detective Bureau that unlimited overtime wouldn't cure, okay? I've got people very unhappy with me because for the first time in police history, we've cut overtime and lived within our budget. Mm-hmm. At the same time, our clearance rates for every crime have increased, not decreased. They've increased. And what have we done? We've put more cops in uniform in the neighborhoods, aggressively policing neighborhoods with the latest crime data we can put at their fingertips. That cuts crime. Follow-up investigations create justice, and we need quality follow-up investigations. But it's cops in the neighborhoods that prevent crime, and that is our first responsibility.
You've just had your contract renewed by the Fire and Police Commission, meaning you obviously have a vote of endorsement from them, and that implies that implies from the mayor. Do you think that this will make it easier for you to get control of some of the things that we're talking about here, since it's clear you're not going anywhere, and I believe you're the first chief to actually be renewed in several decades in Milwaukee?
I think some folks were holding their breath, hoping I'd leave. I think they can exhale now and get on with the program. I'm very proud of this police department, Mark. I mean it, because you know what? For all my strategizing and all my data mining, the work is being done in the street by the men and women of this police department, and they have a great work ethic. They've made an impact on the lives of people and on the safety of neighborhoods. Do we have work to do? You bet. Are we declaring victory anywhere? No. This is a challenged community. It's got one of the highest poverty rates in the country. It's got significant crime, and we're going to keep pounding away at it and keep making progress. But I believe if we keep making the kind of progress we have been making, people of this city will be and will continue to be justifiably proud of their neighbors who wear the police uniform.
I want to thank you for joining us and answering all of my direct questions directly, which I think is the only way you know how to answer questions.
Well, thank you, Mark. I really do appreciate some of those questions you answered, because like I say, there's always the whispering going on. I'd much rather have a grown-up look me in the ear, so to speak,
right,
and ask me the direct questions. So I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay.
That's Milwaukee Police Chief Edward Flynn. I will have some thoughts on the things that you heard over the preceding 35 to 40 minutes or so after the break. News Talk 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. You just heard an extraordinary interview with the police chief of Milwaukee, Ed Flynn. I've been wanting to talk to him about this issue of response time for some time. In the interim, this series that has gotten a lot of attention has appeared in the newspaper, in which they've chronicled the number of Milwaukee police officers who have, in one form or another, broken the law, but remain on duty as police officers. So it became kind of a two-pronged interview, and then some comments as well on the crime stats thing. I want to offer my thoughts on this and break it up into the areas that we talked about. First of all, on the police response time issue, what I wanted to find out was what his attitude and philosophy here were. I don't believe that response time is the be-all and end-all of running a police department in Milwaukee, as I mentioned. Everybody understands there's a limited number of police officers, and everybody also understands that there are some people who live in this city who are simply abusive when it comes to calling the cops whenever they feel like calling the cops. And it becomes a very, very difficult thing to be able to handle. You also have many situations that don't require an immediate response from a police officer. However, we did have back-to-back people who contacted me, and I doubt that they are the only people in the city who experienced this, although people are likelier to contact me than anyone else when something like this occurs, that had a remarkably slow response to home invasions or slash burglaries. People broke into the house, and in both cases, there was uncertainty as to whether or not the burglar was still on the premises, in which the police department responded very, very slowly, hours. And I talked about both of those incidents on the program. And I've raised the question about whether or not the chief's philosophy that response time isn't the highest priority in all instances was resulting in a police department that de-emphasized response time on urgent situations that were still dangerous. The chief's response is that it shouldn't have, and that in both of the incidents that we described here, there are people who screwed up. Now, did they screw up because they've gotten bad direction? Did they screw up because there are people in the communication center who don't have any common sense? Did they screw up because there were simply bad judgments made about what the nature of the calls were? I don't know. I am heartened that the chief has made it clear here that he does believe incidents in which people feel unsafe and are threatened do require an immediate response. And his statement that we should send somebody out right away to see what the situation is, and if there is no immediate threat, worry about getting the report after that, seems to me a common sense response to this. But this is an important issue. People who think when they call the cops aren't going to come. If they have the means, they will leave the city. It isn't just crime, it's the fear of crime that drives people out of middle-class neighborhoods in Milwaukee. And we all know how Milwaukee is set up right now. There are two areas of intense crime, and then there's the rest of the city where there is some crime or little or no crime. The people who live in those second two areas don't want to feel as though they've been orphaned by a police department that's putting all of its resources into the high crime areas. The chief's response to this is, to me, reassuring. But as you know, I judge things not on the basis of what people say, but what happens. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not the kinds of situations that I've described where people have to wait hours for a cop will continue or not. But his statement, at least, is in terms of how response time fits into dealing with situations like this, I thought was satisfactory and a good response. On the second area, this issue of police officers on the department who have broken the law. The chief essentially is alleging that a hatchet job has been done. Not essentially, he said, a hatchet job has been done on the department by the newspaper. He harshly criticized the series, saying it's unfair, saying that it has unfairly stigmatized the entire police department, and said it was unfair in many instances to officers involved by going back 20 and 30 years on minor incidents that have since been resolved in their individual lives, and trumping this up and treating them as very, very serious offenses and things that should be brought back to haunt these officers many years after they occurred. He also implied that the Sentinel Journal has a vendetta against the police department and is obsessed with cops. My thoughts on this. I think that this is an area where you can't have a black or white answer. The question is, should anybody who breaks the law be terminated from the police department? My answer would be no. Breaking the law implies all sorts of things. Not feeding the meter is breaking the law. Ordinance violations are breaking the law. It gets trickier when you get into criminal activity. And I understand that there are still some people out there who think that every time you break the law, you're committing a crime. We've had this battle for 22 years in trying to get people to understand that almost all of the time you break the law, you are not committing a crime. There are various statuses of offenses. When you get into the area of crimes, and crimes include are two types, misdemeanor and felonies, then it becomes trickier. The point I think I would make with regard to the newspaper series is that they seem to go back a long way in time dealing with officers who years and years and years ago perhaps should have gotten more harsh treatment, but nobody involved in that non-harsh treatment is still around. What are you supposed to do? Retroactively can somebody because you think his wrist was slapped 22 years ago? The district attorney has only been on the job for, how long has Chisholm been the DA? I was going to say about 3 or 4 years. I could be somewhere between 2 and 5. You know how my memory works. And this police chief has only been here 4 years. To bring up any cases that predate that and imply that people who are running the police department now are soft, I'm not sure I understand the point of that. Now, it is true that they've gone back and dealt with cases of individual officers who may have did things that were rather serious at the time and point out that they are still police officers. There may be some newsworthy value in that, and I don't think that I would be as critical as the chief was in reporting on that. However, I felt that the use of mugshot-type photos for individuals who in almost all cases were not accused of crimes was a cheap shot by the newspaper and was done for the purpose of impact. It was also done for the purpose that drives that newspaper, which is to win another Pulitzer Prize. They have been far more concerned with winning awards than actually reporting the news. I do think, however, the newspaper series does raise fair questions. What is the line? When should a cop be fired? Now, it should be pointed out in terms of Flynn's response to this that he has moved to fire 16 police officers in his four-year tenure. He didn't say so, but I suspect that the standards have gotten a little tougher under him than they were previously. But also remember that the police chief in Milwaukee doesn't fire, the Fire and Police Commission fires. The chief seemed to be arguing the point to me that the newspaper was hyping these cases for the purpose of trying to destroy the credibility of the police department. Whether you agree with the answer or not, the chief's response was to strongly defend the integrity of the people in his department, and he's the first chief in the last several who I think have tried to do that. I think Nanette Haggerty was generally neutral when it came to defending her department. She was almost, in looking at the history of this, almost an interim chief the entire time she was the chief. She was a transitional chief. Prior to that, you had two chiefs, Art Jones and Phil Areola, who seemed to obsess on getting off, on skewering their own department. The idea that Jones and Areola were somehow soft on police officer discipline is absurd, given the fact that both of them were running a reign of terror in those departments, looking for ways to, in the case of Jones, punish your old enemies, and in the case of Areola, suck up to the news media. I guess one of the problems that I have with the story is that it goes back in time to deal with cases that they felt weren't sufficiently aggressively handled when they were police chiefs who were going after cops, trying to can them right and left for anything. For heaven's sakes, you had Areola trying to fire two police officers because they made a judgment call with regard to kid running around in the street. The old Conorak Synthesis phone situation where two officers were unfairly savaged by a police chief looking to suck up to the media. So I just think to say that the history of Milwaukee has been that there's been a softness with regard to police officers just is, belies the history of who it was that was the chiefs during these eras. As for Flynn's response, I don't think they can make the case one way or another that Flynn has been soft on officer discipline because he's only been here 4 years and I haven't seen anybody raise anything with contemporary cases, cases that are occurring now. The newspaper wants to judge Flynn on this. It would seem to me that they should go into the incidents that have occurred under his watch and were the officers sufficiently dealt with there. The drunk driving question, that's in the eyes of the beholder. Should a cop who gets nailed for drunk driving be fired? Well, you usually don't get fired from most jobs for a first offense drunk driving. Should a police officer position be different than that? The chief said he wants to consider the circumstances. He was implying that if the cop is pulled over on the side of the road sleeping it off, it should be different than if you're weaving around in the middle of the road with three people in the car. Again, you can decide for yourself as to what you think about that. And then finally, this question of the crime stats. Flynn is obsessed with stats. He's obsessed with producing good crime stats. He's obsessed with using the stats as a tool to do effective policing. The second part, I don't think anybody would argue with. Using stats as a tool for effective policing. I do have a concern, and I've always had a concern with police officers who are obsessed with stats as a way of telling the public that the community is safer. Have the stats been massaged? I certainly don't have any proof of that. There are people who think, however, that there's been a de-emphasis in investigation of certain type of crimes in order to lower the stats. The chief obviously adamantly denied that. He and I will forever have a disagreement on whether or not the police department needs to have an ongoing permanent force investigating corruption in elections. We have a lot of corrupt people in Milwaukee, and we have organizations that have been nailed for corrupt systemic behavior. Racketeering-type behavior, Acorn and whatever names it travels under. We've had illegality in the voter process in Milwaukee for years, and it doesn't just occur on Election Day. It occurs throughout the period of time that people can vote and campaign. He and I simply have a strong disagreement of opinion on that. I do appreciate the fact that when you ask him a question, he answers it. And while it did take a little bit of hair-pulling to get him to come on the program, none of his immediate predecessors would be willing to come on my show and answer the kind of questions that I ask, which obviously were direct and to the point. It certainly was a spirited defense by him, and his answers on the subject question of police discipline in the series in the newspaper very, very bold. And as I said, he hasn't talked to anyone in the media until today about that series. It will be interesting to see how the newspaper, presumably they would report on his response to their series, how the newspaper responds to the comments that you heard the chief say here on my program. That was a long summary, but necessary to get all of my thoughts in on this. Paul said he seems to relish the questions and the opportunity. I don't think he doesn't mind the give and take. On the other hand, as I said, it took a fair amount of work behind the scenes and a little bit of hammering on my part to get him to come on the program, to do what you hear. I think like most chiefs, he is clearly a guy who is sensitive to criticism. No doubt about that. And he clearly has a very prickly personality. On the other hand, the mayor is happy with him, and I have said that he's the best police chief that's been on the job since I've been here. However, that's saying nothing. Chief Jarnik was here when I started, but he left so shortly after that I can't evaluate his job performance because I was not here for 99% of it. He retired like a couple of months after I got here. Of the chiefs who have been here since I have been doing the program, Areola, Jones, and Haggerty, and now Flynn, he is the best police chief we've had. But as I've said, Areola and Jones were clowns. So I think he's doing, in general, a good job in the community, although I have issues and concerns that you heard me raise here on the program. As for the series in the newspaper, I'm not going to go so far as the chief did in saying that everything about the series was useless. I do believe, however, there were certain things that were unfair. The business of going back years and years and years in cases not involving Flynn when he was the police chief, and in some cases were very minor for the officers themselves, I think was unfair. But I think also the visual way that they printed the series and the amount of time that they spent mugshots for cops and so on is aimed at getting the dramatic attention of winning awards rather than actually reporting the news. And if you want to say that Flynn is obsessed with crime stats, the Sentinel Journal is obsessed with winning awards, just obsessed with it.